from the 1998 Heart of Illinois Convention of Home Educators.
Blumenfeld, he's the author of Blumenfeld's Alphaphonics, is a native of New Yorker who now makes his home in Waltham, Massachusetts. Sam graduated from City College of New York in 1950 and studied at the Sorbonne in Paris. On his return to the United States, he entered the book publishing industry and went on to become the editor of the Universal Library Quality Paperback Series at Grosset & Dunlap. He served as chairman of the Massachusetts branch of the Reading Reform Foundation for 20 years. Sam has taught in public and private schools and has tutored extensively. In addition, he has been a featured speaker on hundreds of radio programs and has lectured in all 50 states. In 1983, Sam created his phonetic reading system, Alphaphonics, a primer for beginning readers, which has achieved enormous popularity among homeschoolers in the United States and abroad. His direct, simple, logical method has taught thousands of children and adults to read. In 1997, he expanded this program to include video, audio, lesson tapes, readers, and other learning tools to help in the reading process. Sam is president of the newly established Literacy Unlimited, Inc., which hopes to create a learning revolution in America with its recently revised and enhanced Alphaphonics reading program. For those of you who have been here last night and this morning, I hope that you've been able to get in on his keynote addresses upstairs. If not, those tapes would be available later. Also, they do have a table in the curriculum center over there where this quite a bit of this material is on sale over there. So take time to stop over at his table, and he will be there later on to answer questions, and he also has a staff there to help. With that, Sam, it's all yours. Okay.
This is it, huh? All right, and it's all being, the tape is.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to stand and sit because I've been standing now since, 9 a.m.? I'm getting a little tired. Anyway, the subject of this workshop is the attention deficit disorder, ADD or ADHD. Now, I want you to all fess up. How many of you are on Ritalin? How many of you have children who've been on Ritalin? Okay, all right, so. Now, there's a great deal of controversy around this subject, and certainly I'm not going to please everybody, because I've had, my view of attention deficit disorder is a little different from most people today, because when I was going to school, there was no such thing. No such thing as attention deficit disorder. No such thing as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And I'll explain why there wasn't such a thing in my day and why there is so much of it today, and then we can get into it. See, when I was going to school, back in 1931, when I entered the first grade, now that's ancient history, 1931, it's long before you were born, that's the classroom was very orderly. The desks were bolted to the floor. Do you remember those? Some of these old school buildings still have them. They're getting rid of them, but in those days, the desks were bolted to the floor. You sat in rows. You didn't speak to your fellow student. That was forbidden. Perfect silence. The teacher sat at the front of the room. She was the focus of attention. She taught everybody the same thing. That's why it was possible to have 40 kids in a room and for everybody to learn. Hillary Clinton this morning was talking about how we have to have smaller class size. Size of class has nothing to do with learning. It has to do with how the class is organized, the configuration. But anyway, in those days, the teacher was able to teach 40 kids because she was teaching them all the same thing. There were no distractions. The walls were pretty bare, maybe a map of the United States, maybe a picture of George Washington. Place was clean, orderly, and the teacher was using rational, sane methods of teaching. She was teaching reading by phonics. She was teaching cursive handwriting. She was teaching arithmetic by rote. And of course, as I said, she was the center of, she was the focus of attention. You couldn't possibly have attention deficit disorder in that classroom. Couldn't happen, because the configuration of the classroom made it impossible. Now let's fast forward to 1998, and you enter a first grade classroom. What do you see? Chaos. What do you see? Kids seated around little tables, talking to one another, pestering one another, doing all kinds of things. Where's the teacher? She's no longer the focus of attention. She's wandering around the room. She's now what is known as a facilitator. And where's her desk? It's in the corner somewhere, you know, piled high with stuff. Distractions? Look around the room. Every piece of wall is covered by Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, dinosaurs, you name it. Whatever they can find is up there. Everything possible to distract the child. You've got gerbils, you've got fish, you've got rabbits. You've got mobiles hanging from the ceiling. In case you're not distracted by the wall, you're distracted by the ceiling. The kids are chattering and talking, and some are pasting things. One kid may be sprawled on the floor doing his thing. Another child may be under a table reading a book. Another child may be just staring into space. Everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody has their own educational plan. And in that chaos, some kids cannot focus attention. Is there something wrong with the child, or is there something wrong with the atmosphere in which that child is? Now I ask you, supposing we took that same educational philosophy and applied it to a research library. You ever gone to a reading room of a big library where the scholars are sitting at their desks, poring over their books with a lamp? It's quiet. Somebody talks and everyone goes, shh. Why is silence so important? Because if you want to concentrate on something, you need silence. Now, supposing we said, well, we're going to be progressive and we're going to turn our research libraries into the classroom. So you'd have kids walking around and coming up, oh, what are you reading? Can I look over your shoulder and read with you? And then you have kids running around and all sorts of things hanging from the ceilings and little bells ringing. And what would the scholars do? They'd get out of there as soon as they could. The problem with the school is your kids can't get out. They're stuck in this distracting situation and they have no way out. And the teachers are using whole language, the new math, invented spelling, the craziest forms of teaching ever invented by the human race is being practiced in those classrooms. Is it any wonder why children come down with ADD? How could you possibly concentrate in that kind of atmosphere? Now, some kids can. You know why? They have nerves of steel. A lot of kids can. And so they're now labeled ADD. Now, of course, there are some kids, because of the distractions and because of the fact that they're not learning to read, become very frustrated and become hyperactive. Because when you're frustrated, you're angry. And when you're angry, what do? You act out. And the only way that these kids can, express their frustration in the classroom is to act out. And so they're considered hyperactive. And the only way to quiet them down, to get them to sit in their seats, is what? To give them a pill. To drug them. That's the only solution the schools have for this situation. Now, if the kids cannot thrive in such an atmosphere, just drug the little animals, you know. Just drug them. Be through with them. Drug them. 4 million kids are being drugged every day in America today. Can you believe it that 4 million children must be drugged with Ritalin? And Ritalin is not exactly an aspirin. It may be given out like an aspirin, but it's not an aspirin. It does have side effects, all kinds of side effects. The most common one is tics, twitching. And they call that the Tourette's syndrome. So there are side effects to these. No drug can be taken without some sort of side effect, you know. And so my view is that the schools create the situation in which ADD can thrive. Now, there are mothers who come up to me and say, well, my child was hyperactive, you know, the minute he came out of the womb. He's always been that way. And I look at them and I say, well, so what? I mean, we need physically active kids. We need physically courageous kids, because where do we get these stuntmen in Hollywood from? Can you imagine if we drugged those people when they were kids on Ritalin, would they ever become stuntmen? Would they be bungee jumping? Would they be leaping out of aircraft? No. We'd have a bunch of, you know, dulled individuals who couldn't do anything. So it's natural for some kids to be boisterous and very physical, you know, when they're growing up, and you just have to live with it. You don't drug them because of it. That's their personality. Now, there are maybe some extreme cases, but then you have to also ask yourself, well, what are you doing at home? Is the TV set on? Is the child watching all of these cartoons? Crazy cartoons? We live in a society now that has all kinds of influences on young children. I mean, now we have actually children who go out and shoot people. Where did that come from? That was unheard of when I was growing up. Where is it coming from? First of all, the kids in schools are given very little moral education. They don't believe in the Bible in the school. They don't have the fear of God. For example, one of those youngsters who shot up the school in Arkansas, it said that he had recently been converted at a church, and he accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior. But then I asked, did they bother to teach him the Ten Commandments? It's one thing to accept Christ, but if you don't tell him about God's laws, you know, they have to go together. If you taught him the Ten Commandments, he would have read, thou shalt not kill. But instead they get all emotional and, you know, he's accepted Christ, therefore he's good and wonderful, and he will never sin again. That's nonsense. You have to know God's laws before you're going to behave. And when I was going to school, there was still the fear of God in many people. And certainly, if the children didn't have fear of God, they had fear of the principal. And the last thing you wanted was to be called down to the principal's office and your parents to come to school. In those days, parents were pretty strict. These days, when parents are called to school, the parent complains about the school, and I don't blame them, because the schools are doing so many horrible things that there's all this terrible, terrible confusion. Now, there are those doctors who say that ADD is genetic. It's inherited. I don't believe that. Because if it was genetic and if it was something in your genes, then how come we didn't have it back in those days? I would say that it has a lot to do with today's classroom configuration, and we're going to have much more of it. I'll tell you why. The old school buildings are being torn down. No more desks bolted to the floor. Every classroom will have little tables with every possible distraction. Now with computers and God knows what else they're going to put in the schools. So the schools are, you might say, they're incubators. Incubators for attention deficit disorder. They're incubators for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Because they're creating frustrated, angry children who are going to act out. And there's a very strong correlation between reading failure and ADHD. When you look into many of these ADHD cases, you find out that they didn't know their child was ADHD until he went to school. You see. Child was perfectly normal before he went to school. Once in school, he becomes ADHD. And the reason why the schools want to label the kids very quickly is because Ritalin is a quick solution, and it quiets down the parents, and it puts the blame for what's going on the child. See, the child is responsible for this situation, not the school, not the crazy curriculum. It's the child who's responsible, because the child was born that way. That's how they do it. Now, I would say that attention deficit disorder, or ADHD, is a form of behavioral disorganization. The kids become disorganized. Now, we know that Soviet psychologists were experimenting in their laboratories on the ways to artificially create behavioral disorganization. And they did experiments on distraction. And they found out that distraction causes behavioral disorganization. Now, that's very interesting. This book was published in this country in 1932. The title of the book, written by Alexander Luria, L-U-R-I-A, prominent Soviet psychologist who worked with Ivan Pavlov. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with Pavlov and the experiments he did with the salivating dogs, the conditioning experiments. The title of the book is The Nature of Human Conflicts, A Study of the Experimental Disorganization and Control of Human Behavior. If you read that book, you will see how they meticulously, methodically studied how to create behavioral disorganization. And they discovered that distraction was a very good and easy way to do it. Because you can't learn if you're constantly being distracted. You can't concentrate. So we know that they know that they are creating schools now, that school buildings that guarantee that you will have a huge number of children who will have ADD, because they've created the incubators for it. Every school today, every modern school, and you're being given these bond issues for the construction of new schools, right? Have you bothered to look at the architectural plans to see what the configuration of classrooms will be? They're all going to be perfectly wonderful incubators for ADD. It's being planned that way. And the only way that you can save your child from that is to get your child out of that school, out of that atmosphere. It's the only way that you can possibly save your child from ADD, from Ritalin, and all of that. Now, what I want to do is interact with you, because you may have a lot of questions about this, and it's better for me to, rather than just give you a lecture of my views, is to get your readings on this, because many of you have had your own child on Ritalin. So I'd like to hear from you. Do any of you want to challenge what I've said so far? Do any of you want to? Yes, sir.
I didn't necessarily want to challenge, but I wanted to...
Or elucidate, or you know...
At some of the schools, your description would be exaggerated for some schools. Like, there are Christian schools where...
Right.
Certainly there are Christian schools still have their bulletin boards and all that. But there is still a lot more structure.
Yeah.
And there are children in those schools who still have trouble. And I realize what you're saying, too, about the... Many times there's extenuating home circumstances that contribute to it, but at other times there's not. And I'm just wondering what your feelings or approach are, children in those types of settings where they have a fairly structured classroom, albeit not like 1931, but as structured as it will probably get these days. And the parents are not even opting for home education, so.
Yeah, well, I can't explain every situation, you know. But I know a little girl who, a friend of mine has a little girl. She's now, I guess she's almost 10 years old. She's been absolutely hyperactive. There's no question about it. She climbs trees. She jumps. She, you know, her mother is an equestrian. So when her mother was carrying her, she was galloping on horses, you know. My theory is that the reason why she is that way is because when she was being carried for those first 9 months, you know, she was being banged around up and down, you know. And she's used to that sort of thing, and maybe she'll become a stunt lady. I don't know, you know. But she's got this physical courage to do things which, God, my mother must have been very sedentary because I don't have that, you know. But I mean, yes, so there is something there that people are born with, you know. That's the given. But for, as you know, as far as a Christian school which is more structured, you would probably have less ADD in that class. But it wouldn't eliminate it entirely, because even that Christian school would probably be doing things which were not being done back in the... Because I've visited Christian schools which were almost indistinguishable from a public school. Almost. Not quite, but almost. So they can also be guilty of some of this some of these distractions. And also the very the way today's schools operate, the way the schools are delving into the child's feelings and getting them to do all of this affective stuff that has nothing to do with academics, but begins to churn in them, because we're asking, the educators are asking all kinds of questions, they're taking all kinds of tests, constantly taking tests these days, you know. So that may have something to do with it. But as I say, you know, I'd have to know more about that particular situation. Yes, ma'am.
I have 6 children. One is a daughter and 5 are boys, and I think that ADD is a male thing.
Yeah.
But I really see the majority of children that I know that are placed in rural marriage sections are boys.
Right.
And I see some of this as trying to feminize young men in our culture, where boy behavior is bad behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Behavior,
sure.
And I know personally that I tolerate more hyper stuff because I see it as...
Is your boy on Ritalin? No. He's being homeschooled. Okay, well, yeah, that's true. You know, you have boys who are...
I mean, I have one that's more so, but all of them have characteristics that, time to time, I think someone would want to drug them.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, there were, for example, this little girl I know, they were thinking, the mother was thinking of drugging, you know, of Ritalin, but the father said, absolutely not. We're not going to drug this, my daughter. But, I mean, so it's an easy out. You see, for a lot of parents... They want their kids to sit still, and so they drug them, you know. It's the easy way. Yes, ma'am.
I don't negate what you said about environment in the classroom environment, or
right.
environment, TV, and all those societal pressures that are on our kids.
Right.
The way that have an effect on the behavior. But from another standpoint, on environmental influences, we have almost 12-year-old who's been diagnosed with ADHD in the past, and in the past was on Ritalin, but is not now. But I kept looking, saying there's something else going on here. We've gone through hair analysis, and he's got mineral imbalances, and we've taken him to the allergist and discovered he's allergic to everything under the sun. And there are a lot of medical
people
that those things definitely will play, have a factor in what's happening with that child. If he's having an actual physical distraction going on within him, and he might not even be aware of what it is.
Right.
Definitely.
No, you're absolutely right. There are allergies which people are not as aware of as they should be. For example, there's the wheat allergy. I mean, that can destroy a child who's wheat allergic. I know, for example, that I am allergic to polyester. If I wear something that's, you know, polyester against my skin, it chafes. It creates pain. Now, if a little child is being put in a polyester, say, pajamas, and has experienced some kind of allergic reaction to it, that child is going to be kicking and screaming. It's as simple as that, because of the pain. The parents may not be aware of that, but you can have an allergic reaction to artificial materials. Nutrition is another thing. The things we're feeding our kids, everything is sugar. You know, you look at today's cereals. Now, when I was growing up, what did I eat? I ate herring and onions. Ooh, delicious, wonderful. kids today should be eating herrings and onions. You know, I ate oatmeal. Wonderful oatmeal out of, you know, the old way. Your mother had to, you know, cook it for a half hour. That sort of thing. Today's kids are eating everything that's over-sugared, you know. You look at these cereal boxes, and it's just pure sugar they're getting. That may have an influence, too. So there's so many different things that are happening that you've got to be aware of, not only the classroom situation, but what are you giving the child to eat at home? What is the child wearing? Is he wearing cotton or polyester? All the things have to, you have to be aware of that. Is the child allergic to wheat? You know, that sort of thing.
In the public school setting, too, just because of the nature of the building and health codes,
right.
I think they're probably more exposed to a lot of chemical substances.
Yeah.
We've had
schools where the air is so bad that children get sick. We've had office buildings in Boston that have had to be closed down. They built a new office building for the Department of Motor Vehicles in Boston, and everybody got sick in that building. They couldn't stand it, and so they had to move out of that building. They don't know what caused it, but a lot of these new materials that they're using in structures give out all kinds of strange, I don't know what it is, but atoms, God knows, you know, if they're heated. You take something, for example, that looks okay when it's at normal temperature, then it's heated in the winter, and those atoms and molecules begin to fill the atmosphere, and people can be allergic to that. The back of the room, lady.
So when you're homeschooling, you're kind of, everything is up to the mother.
Right.
And say if you're having problems with one child, how do you know if maybe they do have an ADD problem, or if it's just because they're a boy, or how do you figure some stuff out?
Well, you first have to ask yourself, what is the problem? You have to describe the problem and then see if you can find a cause. It's as simple as that. You can always put a name on it. You can say, oh, well, he's got ADD, attention deficit disorder. What is attention? Attention deficit disorder means that he can't pay attention. Why can't he pay attention? Maybe it's the way you're teaching. Maybe it's something in the room. Maybe it's God knows what, you see. So you have to really ask questions before you can determine what the problem is. And if you do decide that he's having problems paying attention or focusing or concentrating, is the solution a drug? Or is the solution changing things in the way that you're doing them? Well, I don't know what ADD is, except what they tell us. Now, that their description is if he fidgets, if he kicks his legs, or what is it, you know? It's very interesting, the symptoms, the so-called symptoms of dyslexia. They're just the normal things that people do when they're bored or a little nervous. And they've put a label on it. Now, why is the label so important? Because the schools get money. It's as simple as that. For example, symptoms. ADHD has three main hallmarks. Now, this is taken from Time magazine. Extreme distractibility and almost reckless impulsiveness, and in some but not all cases, knee jiggling, toe tapping, hyperactivity that makes sitting still all but impossible. Now, I can see instances where I'd want to get out of a room. I can turn this place into instant I can make you all instant ADD. I would lock the doors and pipe in heavy metal music and force you to listen to it. First thing you'd want to do is destroy the loudspeakers. You'd want to get out of the room. You wouldn't be sitting still. You'd be more than knee jiggling. You see, so easy to create a situation where normal people would be acting as if they had ADD. Just make it very uncomfortable, very unpleasant to sit in a particular room. Listen, I remember going to a store where they were playing that kind of, I just left the store. I said, I'm not going to listen to that garbage. And I was driven out of the store by that music. because it was probably put in by some young kid who's behind the counter and has no idea that people my age have different tastes, you know. So you can create an artificial situation in which everybody can be ADD. Yes, sir.
What do you see as an ideal situation for environment in the homeschool?
Well, the ideal situation these days is have a minimum of TV in the home, if any. A comfortable home. Orderly to some extent. I know homes, you know, easily get disorderly, but, you know, have the kids pick up after them. Healthy food, good food, a good structured day, plenty of love, plenty of appreciation for the child. And that's a good thing about homeschooling is that when children, you know, the thing that children want most, and this was in a survey, is they wanted more time with their parents. Now, when their parents are teaching them, they're getting all the time that the parents can possibly give them, and the children love it. Because that's a true show of love. So they have love and security and all of that. Those are the things. Quietness, when quiet is required. The ability to think. The use of logical methods of teaching, like alphaphonics, you know, arithmetic, rote learning. As a matter of fact, if any of you want to make sure that your child is being taught in the proper way, just go back to the old books, go back to the 19th century. Go to these antiquarian bookstores, pick up a grammar book, pick up a reading book. Have your child read good inspirational literature, you know, stuff written way back when writers used multisyllabic words. So there are many things you can do to make your house, your home, a healthy, pleasant place to live. It's a place that you enjoy being in, not the kind of house that you want to get out of, you see. Yes, ma'am.
In a classroom situation, you talked about differences from 1931 to now. Would your suggestion be to get rid of all of the distractions, all the bulletin boards, all the pictures that might be there, and,
right,
and stick them in straight rows? And
absolutely. If what is the purpose of education? See, that's another thing. What is your philosophy of education? What is the purpose of education? What is education? You see, from the establishment's point of view, the purpose of education is to dumb down the public so we can control them, period. So they'll do anything in their power to create a disorganized behavior, because the more disorganized behavior you have, the more kids you can drug, the easier it is to control people by getting people used to the idea that they can be drugged, you see. Drugged into submission. First of all, kids now are required to get all kinds of inoculations. So, you know, all the kids are being turned into pincushions, you know, for all kinds of diseases. Some of them, you know, are probably good. Probably, you know, they should be. They should get these inoculations. But it should be up to the parents is how many inoculations a child should get, when. Because first, that's another thing. We don't know what children are allergic to. So you're sticking all this stuff into them, putting foreign substances in their bodies, and you have no idea what they're going to react to. So we can be over-inoculating the public. I'm not saying that, you know, like I got a smallpox vaccination. That's about it. I didn't get another injection until I went into the Army, and then they gave us that tetanus injection, which was pretty horrible. Made your arm sore. And that was it. What they're doing in the Army now is they're giving these anti-anthrax injections. They're going to say every person in the armed forces is going to get it. Now, we know that some are going to have negative reactions. We know that some people are going to be allergic. They don't care. Give it to everybody. And probably this so-called desert storm syndrome is the result of, much of it may be the result of injections, inoculations that were given to these soldiers on an experimental basis. They didn't even know if these things worked. And the result are thousands of young men and women who have debilitating conditions because of that. Now, how did I get onto that? You know? Yes?
I wonder your thoughts on, could one cause of, my way, children and adults having what would be called ADD is the immediate gratification that is so important to our society as a whole. Everything is instant.
Yeah, that's another very good point, is that so much in our society now is geared to instant gratification, you know, immediate gratification. The people don't have the patience. They're so easily frustrated. They want it, and they want it now. That's what they say on the picket lines. We want it, and we want it now, you know. We want equal rights, and we want them now. Everything is now, 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 now. And you can't plan for the future that way. You've got to have delayed gratification, knowing that you prepare for the future. And today, you know, with credit cards, you can get anything you want now. If you're willing to get into debt, you can take that vacation to the Caribbean or go to Europe, you know, and then you come home and you've got this credit card bill, a couple of $1,000, and you say, oh, well, we'll pay it off, you know. And then you have, you know, bankruptcies. Personal bankruptcies are at all-time high because people are doing just that, immediate gratification. It's interesting that when I was growing up, we were still in the period where people bought, say, a bedroom set or a dining room set was to last forever. You remember those days? You probably have inherited some as antiques. You know, grandma's dining room set, which she kept, you know, beautiful, polished, and it's worth money today, you know. But these days, people throw out things. If your TV set isn't working, throw it out, get another one. It's cheaper to buy a new one than to have the old one repaired, you know. So we're used to that sort of thing now of replacement, throwing things out, you know. And what's the one thing in America that has grown more than anything else? Storage space. You notice how you're filling your homes with more and more stuff, and you need more and more storage spaces because we're gratifying ourselves. So that's part of the problem, too. And the children are growing up in that kind of a society. They're growing up where they have cars. Kids are put into, you know, kids are driving cars at the age of 16. They're put into this incredibly powerful machine. And some of the kids, you know, you have the highest rate of death on the highway among the teenagers because they don't know what to do with this powerful machine. It'll go 100 miles an hour with just a little push of the accelerator. And some of these kids just don't realize what they're doing, and they kill themselves. Yes, sir.
What would your advice be to a family where they've adopted and the child's coming from a previously disorganized home and has, you know, obvious reasons to learn poorly and to be distracted and anxious, and this family's wanting to basically help the child cope and get through a Christian school? And,
right.
And what would you advise them?
Well, if you have a child who already has been so, I'm not going to say damaged, but who has been so conditioned, mm-hmm. How do you uncondition a child like that? Well, you've got to really work at it. You have to examine how the child reacts to things, how they learn, what they know, what they don't know, what has troubled them, and try to sort things out, create quiet time if they're used to a lot of noise and all of this music. If you notice today, kids will wear earphones and listen to this horrible stuff. And you wonder what is it doing to them spiritually to hear this horrible stuff, you know, with earphones. it's not an easy problem to solve. You really have to work at it. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know the child. You have to ask a lot of questions of where did the child learn this? Where did he go to public school? If he went to school, you must immediately assume that he was taught by crazy teachers. I'm not saying crazy in the sense that these are teachers who go around doing crazy things. They're using crazy teaching methods. I refuse to legitimize whole language and that sort of thing by calling that a true curriculum. It's nuts. Pure, simple insanity. So if a child has been in an insane school for 3 years, you're going to see the results of that. And I hear stories that are unbelievable. This one mother yesterday came up to me and told me that her son was in the hospital because he tried to commit suicide. He hated school and all that. Well, finally she's taking him out. Finally. He had to threaten suicide before she'd get him out. Some mothers, some parents don't realize that the kids cannot stand it. You see, so that little boy that who may have gone through that, you've got to find all of that out. The first thing I always ask of any parent who comes up to me with a child who has a reading problem, I say, where did that child go to school? How was that child taught to read? And most of the parents have no idea how the child was taught to read. They'll tell me the school, and I'll say, well, obviously the child is dyslexic or has a reading problem because of the way the child was taught, because every child can learn to read if taught in the proper way. Some children learn a little more slowly than others, but eventually they all learn, because if they taught themselves to speak their own language, then their brains are perfectly okay. That's the only time you know that a child can have a genuine problem is if there's something wrong up there, and you can see it in other things. They have other symptoms besides a reading problem. Anyone who has a brain lesion will exhibit other symptoms besides a reading problem. But perfectly normal, healthy kids who have reading problems were made that way by the schools. And that can turn into ADD also when the child is frustrated and acts up. You see? Yes, ma'am. Could you speak up a little?
The school is first year kindergarten.
Right.
They want to put him on ADD.
Ritalin?
Ritalin. And I was asking what the problem was. And so she told me the behavior, and I said, well, if you're willing to write me a note home every day when he disobeys, we'll take care of it when he gets home. And we had not only the teacher, but the bus driver reporting to us his behavior problems. And really, it wasn't an ADD problem. It was a behavior problem. And it was amazing the change in his behavior when we were dealing with it, when we took the responsibility to deal with it with the teacher. She was willing to take that extra step to write the note. She didn't have to do that, but she wrote me a note every single day.
Mm-hmm.
How he did. And he knew he was getting notes at home. And so if he didn't bring the note to mom, then I would have to call the teacher. Because I knew the note probably said something that he didn't want us to hear.
I see.
So for him, I really see him because he's easily distracted. I use a timer a lot. I say, okay, now I'm going to set this time. You have 5 minutes to complete this task. And I set him his desk is in the corner. He has nothing, just white walls. And I'll say, you have 5 minutes to complete this task. And it can be amazing. Like, he knows he has only a certain amount of time to do certain tasks that he completes them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't be distracted. If he doesn't complete it, then there is a consequence.
Yes. Well, that's something that's turned out okay. Now you're homeschooling him now. Yeah, that's good. That's wonderful. Well, we're at the hour, so I'm sure you all want to go to lunch. And it's been a pleasure talking with you.